Subcommittee on Human Services, it's Thursday, July 10th, 2003. We're almost at midway in this month. It's going by a lot faster than I think what we all have realized. We are in work session today on House Bill 5030, Department of Human Services, Health Services, Public Health Programs, and this is a preliminary budget. Just a couple of housekeeping items. If there's anyone in the audience who has a cell phone, please turn it off so that it doesn't disrupt the proceedings. And we continue to have with us Rosie and Rosette, our mascots who are hungry. Their purpose is to discourage the use of acronyms. But at the same time, we don't mind if you do use them because Rosie and Rosettes would like you to contribute to them so that the dollars collected at the end of session will go to the Oregon Food Bank. So some of you know the drill and know that Senator Carter isn't here, but she's our actually collector, and she makes certain that if you make a oops, that you pay up, and she will tell you that Rosie and Rosettes do not like coins, that they like that green stuff. So because it buys more canned foods and more foods than the coins do. With that, I know the agency is here, and I will have Cindy begin walking us through. You should have received your memorandum yesterday. But if you have not, I'm certain that she has additional copies for members, and we will start walking through House Bill 5030, the Health Service Public Health Program, similar to what we have done with all the budgets today.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cindy Jones. In front of you, I have passed out a packet of information. It's the memo that I sent up last night, which includes a brief summary of the reshoot items along with policy packages, performance measures, and there's a staff measure summary on the back for the fee bill, which is House Bill 5061.
Cindy, why don't you walk us through first the reshoot request? I think that before getting into the memorandum.
Right, and that's where I was going to start. It's on the spreadsheet that also should be at your spot. I have outlined these with numbers, so you can start with number one. Is a public health increase for bioterrorism and limitation. It is from the 2002 bioterrorism grant, and it's for $10,326,896. This is a roll-up for Rule 305. Number two is adding 25 positions for the bioterrorism grant. This was actually done back in June of 2000 during the rebalance. It was added in to the 0305 governor's budget, although there was a mix-up with whether it was in or not, and it was confirmed yesterday that it is in. So if you look at the adjustments on the third page, we're going to take those back out, those 25 positions. Items 3 through 7 actually are from the April rebalance, and I can go through each one of those. Number 3 is a net impact of other funds for different grants, the Komen grant, the Assessment Initiative Grant, the Child Development Rehab Center Grant. These were all approved during the April rebalance. Okay. Number 4 is an increase of other funds limitation, and that's to cover the purchase of prescription drugs for the AIDS Drug Assistance Program. Again, that was part of the April rebalance. Number 5 was an increase in other funds limitation for the medical marijuana program. It added 3 limited duration positions. And again, that was a part of the April rebalance. Number 6 was that additional limitation for and position for authority for 3 limited duration positions. This was for the oral health grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and to improve health services for mothers and young children. That was also part of the rebalance in April. Number 7 was a increase in federal funds limitation to add 4 full-time limited duration positions for the newborn screening, and which is the heritable conditions grant. And again, that was part of the April rebalance. Number eight was forecast reductions in December, and what it would do, it redistributed the workload and eliminated three vacant positions. Number nine was a backfill of general fund with available other funds. Number 10 was non-limited federal limitation for the WIC program due to an increase in revenue for the program delivery food vouchers. That was a part of the November 2nd rebalance, and it wasn't in the governor's 0305 budget. Number 11 was a net impact to correct some errors that were made. It's just an adjustment that moved capital outlay dollars from public health labs to the areas of mental health. It's an adjustment that just corrects an error there. Number 12 is fee increase for the cancer registry. It was not in the governor's budget, so this is part of the fee bill, the House Bill 5061, that we'll talk about a little bit later. 13, it's just a phase out of special payments in environmental services and consultation, prenatal, and it phases those programs out, which was part of an O2O package earlier.
What question?
Jefferson Smith.
What does SBHC stand for? On 13.
Madam Chair, George Naughton with the Department of Administrative Services. It's school-based health centers, I believe. Is that correct?
Thank you. Thank you.
Can I ask a question?
Senator Carter.
Number 13. Can you tell me the effects of multicultural health central administration?
The separate amount? Mm-hmm. I don't have that broken. Madam Chair, Senator Carter, I don't have that broken down. It was a net effect of all of these that I did it. I coupled them up, but I could get that information to you.
Madam Chair, can you or someone from the Health Department tell me what was the effect of this?
Grant, can you come up, please? And George, you might as well come up, too. And Barry, you can come up, too, so that we can have everyone here in case there's questions.
Thank you. I think he's here, too. My question to you is, what's the net effect of the elimination of the Multicultural Health Administration? Special
question. Why don't we bring this in? Why don't we bring this in? No.
Madam Chair, Barry Cast, Assistant Director for Health Services, and Mr. Coulomb, who's been whispering in my ear, keeps track of these expenditures. The effect of this particular payment is actually an internal transfer between Public Health Services and the Business Services section of the department. So it doesn't have a material effect on services.
Does it have a programmatic effect?
Programmatic effect.
Okay. What is that
effect? What is the programmatic effect?
No, he doesn't.
Madam Chair, I don't believe there is a programmatic effect.
Okay. Thank you.
One other question.
Senator Carter.
So you're telling me that you guys need the money in the first place?
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, these kinds of payments within the department reflect the changes that we made in the organization of the department to coordinate and centralize some of the business functions.
Thank you for that.
And those expenditures are made either in the program area or in the administrative services area.
I stand for that.
Okay. This is a part of this whole centralization piece that we're doing between the health services and the department itself. Is that what's taking?
Madam Chair, that is correct, but with July 1st, we are now a single agency, and some of those arcane mechanisms will change and be less difficult to explain and understand.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, when you get through this, and if Barry can stay around, can I just ask him another question in his department that will be
soon? Certainly, okay.
Thank you. Mr. Katz, can you tell me that the legislature withdrew the money for lead poisoning from the department, and I'm almost having convulsions as a result of that, since North-Northeast Portland has the highest concentration of homes and houses with lead in it. And can you tell me how will you manage to continue such a public policy with those houses?
The next page is in there.
Next page. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, I have that on the next page. It's part of the co-chair adjustment.
It came up in our caucus, and I was having heartburn, Madam Chair. Thank you.
I don't want you to have a heartburn.
We've had
enough illnesses in this building this session. And, they have been pretty much confined over to the House side.
Okay. So you don't move.
I don't want you to jump it and put it over on the Senate side.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the last item on there is number 14. It's a net impact to correct the duplicated removal of inflation. It was removed once by the agency and then again in the governor's budget. So we're just putting back one of those rather than to have two removed.
So we don't have double counting.
Right. Then before we go on to that third page, if it's okay, we could start at the policy option packages since they're part of the adjustments, which is in the memo and it's on page 2. Within the governor's budget, there were 5 policy option packages. The first one was part of the House Bill 5061, which we'll get to later. It's on a separate staff measure summary. But what it's doing is it's increasing fees for in-home care agency, the cancer registry fees.
You know what? I think that
newborn.
We don't have total packages here. Something is going on.
Didn't get around to passing?
Nope.
I handed my copies out. Can I read?
No, we don't. Why don't we?
Is everybody missing page 2?
Yes.
Senator Portman has.
I have.
Well, actually, the package that was delivered to my office had page 2, but the one that was down here doesn't have
page
2.
Page 2 of the sheet? Of the memo.
Of the memorandum. Why don't we?
No. All right.
We'll stand at ease for a few minutes, and you can get the copy if you want.
All right. So the one that was...
I think everyone has a copy of page 2.
I will let you know. I think I have enough.
Thank you.
We can begin policy option package.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, first of all, I'd like to apologize for not getting that second sheet. I don't know what happened. But starting with policy package 165, it establishes a limitation for House Bill 5061, which includes the in-home care agency fees, the cancer registry fees, the newborn metabolic screening fees, and the environmental lab accreditation fees. The package included these fees, and they were all approved by DAS. There was one part of the fees, the vital records fees, that were also included in the budget for limitation. However, we had those fees, I found out, were denied, so I did not put them in this package. That was one of the recommendations that I made on here. Policy package.
Would you restate that these were fees that were not included in the governor's budget?
All the fees but the vital records fees were included in the governor. Excuse me, let me back up on this. The limitation for each of these fees were included in the governor's budget.
Okay.
However, the vital records fees were not approved by DAS prior. They can raise their fees and go to DAS or
George, would you explain?
Yeah, Madam Chair, what George Naughton with the Department of Administrative Services. These are Senate Bill 333 ratification of administrative fees that were changed. If I can clarify on the vital records fee, the way that this works under Senate Bill 333 is that during the interim, agencies have the ability to administratively increase fees. It only lasts for a two-year window, though, because at the end of the biennium, if this body does not ratify those increases, then the fee reverts to what it was at the previous period. The vital records fee, when it came into us, we looked at the revenue for the 2001-03 biennium, realized that they did not need the fee increase for the 01-03 biennium, and since it wasn't going to have any effect in 03-05, we said you have to put this in as part of a policy package so the legislature can consider it. And then the legislature can decide if they want to do the fee increase or not. The approach that Legislative Fiscal Office is taking is that unless Department of Administrative Services approves it first, we're not going to approve the fee. And so what I would ask is that if you deny this part of the package, let it be with the understanding that we will probably come back to a rebalance and ask for the limitation to approve the fee increase, because they do need the revenue in order to support the program.
And is there any reason why you believe that we don't need to do it now as a part of this package and delay in it for rebalance?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the only reason is that by law it has to be approved by DAS before it can be approved by the legislature. Okay.
So once that DAS does its approval, then we can go forward. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Winters. Really quick, George, can you share with us who pays each of these fees?
Can you guys go for that?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I'm actually going to turn to the department, which knows the program much more better than I do.
Madam Chair, Mel Cohn is the administrator of that portion of the program that runs our vital statistics program, and I think he can describe in detail, but these fees are essentially paid by consumers of the information.
Well, I believe he's asking the question for all the categories.
Yeah, just each one of those. I'm just curious, who are the consumers and who pays them?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, for the record, I'm Dr. Mel Cohn. I'm the administrator of the Office of Disease Prevention and Epidemiology. Each of these items are for a specific service, so the people who are requesting that service, for example, somebody who wanted a copy of a birth or death certificate would pay for that in order to obtain it, and they would pay at the increased fee level. So each of these are for those who are asking for that particular service.
Follow up. So let's go to the newborn metabolic screening fee. Give me an example of, am I missing some?
No,
okay.
It's in there.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I believe that's Dr. Skeel shot the laboratory. That's
Madam Chair, the way we are organized and the way this package is put together involves more than one administration.
That's quite all right.
I just want the committee to understand that
that's quite all right. That we understand that. And I believe that some of this testimony was given to us in prior hearings.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Mike Skeels. I'm the director of the State Public Health Laboratory. The newborn metabolic screening fee is paid for ultimately by the insurance company that's covering the charges for delivery services for newborn infants. Initially, the fee is paid by the hospital, and then they get reimbursed. And so it is a user fee paid for in that way.
Just one last quick follow-up. What happens if a patient doesn't have insurance?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, there are a couple of options. First of all, it's guaranteed under the statute that no child will be refused the service for lack inability to pay. And so the hospital can send us a list of babies for whom they could not recover the cost through insurance. And we essentially just we credit those to their next order, so we just write off those costs and prorate those across the whole program.
Answer my question. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. You may continue.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, policy package 166, it's also a fee increase package set in statute, and it has to do with the licensing and inspection of swimming pools, spas, food service facilities, as well as pool and spa plans review. The package also included an establishment of a biennial connection fee for water system programs. That was part of House Bill 2255. The prior was part of House Bill 3156. During the budget development, the agency chose not to seek the food services fee increase. And when House Bill 2255 went through, it was amended to dash two amendments, which became then non-fiscal. So LFO recommends approval of this package as modified, taking out the amount of money for the non-fiscal and then for removing the food service facility fees. Okay. Policy package 165 is part of the CONRAD 20, the program for foreign position visa waivers. It's House Bill 2151
that we passed out of this committee.
Right. And LFO recommends approval of that policy package with an increase in limitation, because when that bill went through, the fiscal was changed from 20 applicants at a $2,000 rate to 30 applicants at a $2,000 rate, so it was a $40,000 increase that they will need for that package. Policy package 171, it's a nutrition and health screening program. It adds two full-time positions, two FTE to monitor the WIC program. It's federal funds, and there are no matching state funds, and LFO recommends approval of this package.
Is that consistent with the other package, other bills that we passed out last week that had to do with WIC and fresh fruits? And
Madam Chair,
or is that different?
That is different. That was a different bill.
Okay.
Policy package 173, it reestablishes 10 limited duration positions that are tied to their other and federal funds. These are positions that I believe the department has had since 1998. And they've been limited duration positions, and again, they're going to need them for this biennium. And Ella,
are those federal funds grants? Those positions. Beg your pardon. Are those paid by federal fund grant revenue?
Madam Chair, members, Madam Chair, Representative Smith, it's other and federal fund grant revenue.
Thank you.
And LFO recommends approval of this policy package.
Now, the question, do you want to move this package?
Madam Chair, I do have the adjustment on the back, on that third page, just to confuse everybody, the third page of the spreadsheet.
You know you can't confuse us too much, particularly on a Thursday. Our brains are fresher on Monday.
What I've done on this third page of the spreadsheet is the additional co-chair's recommendations and the LFO recommendations for the adjustments are all together. I can split those up where I go into the LFO adjustments and then the co-chair's, if that would be easier.
Would you say that?
Would you say that again?
You'll see at the top it's the co-chairs have their adjustments. And the first point.
These are the adjustments to what the co-chair's previous budget was.
That's correct.
Okay. And so then that everybody understands.
From there, it's labeled LFO recommendation adjustments.
Okay.
So if it is okay, we'll start with LFO recommendations.
Can we talk about, did you not want to talk about the co-chairs just for a moment?
Well, these are actually what she's saying are the adjustments that have been made since the co-chair's budget was out.
Madam Chair, can I ask a question?
Sure.
On the TUR account, we understand that account's been cut by roughly 50% by the co-chairs. And when they made that cut, I was interested to know and wanted to know if that is a one-time reduction in the initial bill, which was actually voted on by the people for setting a certain amount of money aside for tobacco reduction, would still be in place after this cut. Are we changing the law here, or are we just taking this one reduction?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, I understand that the law was changed in the when we did the bill. I believe it was in April. That's my date. What's the sixth special session?
Sixth special session.
That permanently changed the law at that point?
That's what I understand, although
George,
Madam Chair, you'd have to look at the bill language. I think what we did with the statewide rebalancing that we did in February was a one-time reduction of funds. It depends on how the body wants to structure this reduction. If it's a permanent change in how much money gets distributed to the tobacco use reduction account, or if it is like what we did previously where it's a one-time adjustment out. Without seeing the language is what's going to determine if it's one-time or ongoing.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a point. I'd like to see it as a one-time. We possibly could, and have the language structure there. We get this where we want to be, and then the next go around, we can make more
decisions.
Don is
here. Don, would you add
Chair and members?
Yes.
John Britton from the Legislative Fiscal Office. On the bill change, there was a bill. It required a statutory change, but it did not permanently change the allocation of tobacco tax money. So it took a portion of it that had not been spent during the 2001-03 biennium and used it, took it away. And so we would need a similar bill to do the $8 million reduction that is contemplated in the co-chair's budget. But it would be a one-time change.
One-time change. And right now there isn't the bill.
But I would hope that bill will reflect a one-time change.
A one-time change.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Winters. On the tobacco use reduction account, specifically, who is that impact? The reduction, who's that impacting?
Madam Chair, the tobacco use reduction account is a portion of cigarette taxes from ballot measure 44 that are dedicated specifically to prevention programs, to tobacco use reduction. And the way in which we use those, I could ask Dr. Cohn to explain in some detail, but we have a comprehensive strategy for media, working with kids, quitline, those kinds of things that produce the combined effect of reducing the use of tobacco in the state, which has been substantial.
So a portion of that money is now not going to go directly to the counties?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, a significant portion of those funds do go to counties, and that portion would be reduced. We don't yet have an approach for the remaining funds, which in fact are the residual of a budget which was about $20 million last biennium, and because of the reduced use of tobacco now is a smaller account. So we're actually dropping from about $20 million down to $8 million. So we need to refashion that budget, and we're working with the Conference of Local Health Officials to do that. But the counties definitely will receive less funding.
Senator Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gentlemen, you just said that you had about $20 million and were working on reducing the use of tobacco, so that now your account is smaller. I'm assuming it shrank to 16 because this is half the total. So now you've got 8. What will be the quote-unquote cost in terms of reducing the rate of reduction or the increase in the use of tobacco, and what's the cost of what that will mean in other portions of our health care budget? I mean, when you reduce use, you reduce utilization of other medical services, I'm assuming.
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, Mel Cohn, our state epidemiologist who was responsible for the tobacco program, is familiar with the research and the effects and so forth, and I think he'd be best qualified to answer.
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, there's no doubt that a substantial reduction of this kind will have a major effect on the progress that we've made in terms of reducing tobacco use, and this will have serious effects on the health of Oregonians. It's a little bit hard to put a hard number on, you know, exactly how much money is going to be spent, but we do know from other states' experience that a cut of this magnitude will probably halt the downward trend that we've been seeing in tobacco use and may well increase it. And this is going to result in increased deaths and certainly increased illnesses every day here in Oregon. Right now, about 18 people a day die of tobacco-related illnesses here in Oregon, and this is going to have both a short-term and a long-term effect, this kind of cut.
One of the things that I think is very critical and important is to make certain that with what funding that is here, that we continue the community partners that we have in when we look at the the tobacco cessation and reduction program. You know, I'm thinking of to assure not only the media piece and that effect, but, you know, I know that there are contracts with various community organizations around the state so that you're getting at, for example, where you have a high incidence of use in the African-American community so that you're linking those anti-programs to that community. The same is true with the Hispanic community, and that we don't bypass those communities when we're talking about those programs. I think sometimes we have a tendency of thinking that everybody gets their information the same way, and of course we know that that's not true, and so I wanted to put that on record, that we're actually going after the high users to try to reduce, as well as the through the schools. And that's no a secret in this building, and I know that some of my top friends out there know that I've been very concerned that we start and have a more aggressive program in our school systems, you know, and linking up with our public health nurses, because they're on the front line and they're actually, are, you know, have children coming in, and not only the ones coming in, but can talk to their parents. You know, when they're dealing with one part of the health issue, they can deal with the other. So I just wanted to put that out there as you're looking at the use of the dollars, limited though that they may, you know, really focus on the priority of where they should go.
One last comment, then we got to move on. Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, the leading cause of premature death and disability and illness in the country is still cigarette smoking. Obesity is running a close second, but cigarettes number one. And we've cut this budget 50%. We've got to think about that. And the other thing we have to think about is not cutting any further. I've heard people considering eliminating this entirely, which I think would be a travesty. We have a problem with trust with the people of the state anyway. They voted twice to put this money there. We've cut it in half again. We're spending a trivial amount of money on this compared to the entire budgets we're putting out, and I just can't see us going any deeper into this budget. I appreciate the work these people do, and I appreciate your comments, Madam Chair.
Thank you. One point I want to make, and that is, and I might be using a strong term, but it troubles me greatly, because it's like we've lied to our partners who've developed programs in our counties and our cities, but especially to communities of color, where, you know, again, back to corroborate your statement, that is that everybody doesn't receive information in the same way. And I know these guys have made really yeoman's effort in getting community-based organizations geared up. And so even if we and Dr. Cohen just maintain whatever level of shell or program we can in our communities, that is so important for us to be able to do. And I'm hoping that we'll get back to the point where we don't disappoint you and our partners in this state in terms of these dollars that had, to me, a moral authority to go to the people to curtail tobacco use among our young people, for everybody, but especially among our young people in this state.
I know that maybe I don't make things very clear when I talk, but I know we want to save the state money because this is a budget issue, but I really question whether we will actually save anything when all the health care costs get counted in, as Dr. Bates was just pointing out. This won't save the $8 million. I mean, maybe it'll save it in this line item, but it'll push itself into others.
Yeah, I think we're all agreeing that there is a cause and effect, you know, on what we do, and it's the same as, you know, I've had the conversation, because the second leading health problem in this country is obesity, and you know, we've been talking about how can the public health organization begin to also deal with this particular issue from a public policy. So there is some cause and effect of what we're doing, and I think that we're very mindful, those of us who are in budget, of that. And yet at the same time, I know that the co-chairs have put this in, and there are some of us who are trying to change minds. I guess that's the way of putting
it. Good. Thank you.
Madam Chair,
yes,
obesity, I would just remind us that both co-chairs have not approved the federal grant
that would, the federal grant application that would allow us to have a program that addresses obesity. And the department may want to address that at some point, along with a broader question of, are there other federal grants that we are in jeopardy of losing because our co-chairs haven't acted?
We've requested, I've requested the to hear the obesity request as well as the pertussis request. There is currently, if you kept read the paper lately, you will know that there are problems, and I believe it's Medford, is that not right?
Yes, you had an outbreak.
I had an outbreak, and there has been a death associated with pertussis, and so that's another one that is being requested to give the agency some tools, and we will continue to make those requests.
So are you going to discuss this?
Yes. Yes.
I'm only trying to find out deadlines in terms of some grants that are still out there. Maybe, Madam Chair, if you so assign me,
I will assign you, because your chair is just getting so many requests for so many things that it would be very helpful if Senator Carter, that you would take that on as your mission.
So I'll meet with you guys after this meeting to see what grants we have in hopper that we can meet the deadlines on, because I'm really disappointed, Madam Chair. We lost the big one on that lead abatement. The time has come and passed. And yet, in Senator Gordley, in my community, and in other communities in rural Oregon, where there are high incidences of people living in rental properties, the whole issue of lead in housing is very grave. And I'm very, very sad, very saddened by the fact that we missed out on that, because low-income people are three times as exposed to lead in housing than the larger population. And so this doesn't make sense to me.
Well, that's your task.
Thank you.
Okay. So, all right, Cindy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the second co-chair reduction was for the health planning program within public health. The third was the expert toxicology consultation, and that was the $369,940. These three together actually were the co-chairs had combined them for $1.18 million, and those three being the health planning, the expert toxicology consultation, and the program support consultation.
Senator Carter.
Can I ask Barry Cass a question?
Certainly.
What will be the effects of this toxicology reduction? I have an idea, but I think I'd like you to tell me so I won't have to wonder about it anymore.
I think she's getting ready to tell you that she's already solved your problem.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, I passed this out along with that.
Maybe I need to read. Oh, I'm getting so upset.
I just passed it out when I gave you the page number two. So.
So if you walk us through, give us a chance to.
And Barry can answer.
Yeah. Okay. Barry, what's
Madam
the
Chair?
Effect?
Most of, Madam Chair, most of our public health programs are run by other funds or federal funds, fees or grants. Barely 6 or 7% of the budget is general fund. Much of that general fund actually supports the administrative functions that make those grants possible to secure and operate. In the toxicology program, we have about 4 positions that will be lost as a result of this cut. And I've tried to provide you in this document, and I can certainly go through it with the specifics, beginning at the bottom of page 2 with some of the very specific activities that these folks perform. Among them, responding to Senator Carter's concern, is that this is the program that identifies residences in which there is lead contamination and works with residents to recognize them, to protect themselves, works with public information campaigns, and who ultimately prepared the Housing and Urban Development grant that was not approved for submission. Our job really is to help the public protect itself against the health effects of lead contamination, which is rampant in residential structures. Methamphetamine labs, which are, we busted over 200 of them last year, There's a combination of law enforcement, environmental quality, and public health that work together to deal with both the precursor chemicals and the things that are left behind from cooking methamphetamine. Across the United States last year, about 30 kids died from the toxic effects of these chemicals. It's not a trivial matter. Our job is to train, certify, and audit the performance of the contractors who come in and clean up these sites. Our toxicologists consult with Grant's bioterrorism preparedness program. They also work with the chemical stockpile incineration process that's about to begin. In that particular instance, they're the ones who are going to be looking at the samples coming out of the, for want of a better term, of the smokestacks to make sure that the public isn't exposed to environmental contaminants from the incineration of the nerve gas that's stored out there. When there's a chemical spill, they're involved in the health effects of whatever chemical it was. When you drive down the freeway and you see those little signs on the back of a truck, they identify specific substances. If those spill, they can be very serious to the health of the public, individuals who come in contact. We monitor 10 severely contaminated sites in Oregon, including the site in Millersburg, the former watching facility, and the Portland Harbor, among others. There's one in my community that has a chrome contaminant, and we work with the abatement of those waste site contamination. We respond to about 6,000 calls a year for residential contaminants, mostly mold these days, which the public is very concerned about and which actually has been found in a number of Oregon schools. This is the staff that applied for and is running the beach water monitoring program. Oregon was the last state in the country to begin monitoring the bacterial contamination of beach water. And finally, we are the source of expertise for local health departments when they have issues about contaminating chemicals and other substances and working with the public. So the two professional toxicologists and the support staff that go with that produce a wide variety of effects. And I think that the intention here was to respond to the priority list that we brought forward. And this program was on the priority list at a place where it was convenient to cut. But I think we did not communicate clearly in our hearings the significance of what we do here.
And I want to go back to the impact. If these cuts were made, would you have the ability to do 60%? 20%, 30%, what percentage of these activities would you be would remain that you'd have the staffing capacity to do?
Madam Chair, the capacity to do these functions, to manage them, would be severely impaired.
That's not my question.
I don't have a number for you, Madam Chair, but I can certainly do that.
Would you get back to me and let me know what the actual impacts are to the various programs so I can have some good, solid...
We'll have that for you tomorrow. Absolutely.
Thank you.
May I?
Dr. Hagan.
Yeah.
Chair
Wenders, if I could just add to that, I think one thing we could say, though, is if we lost a toxicologist, there would be some functions that we simply could not do. And, for instance, for the CSET program, the Chemical Stockpile Emergency Preparedness Program out in Umatilla, they rely on our toxicologists, if there ever was a release there, to help determine when it would be safe to go back in. If we did not have a toxicologist, we simply could not provide that function.
I think it is very helpful, and we've had this discussion, that as much information that you can provide that allows us to make informed decisions, the better.
Yeah, my question has to do with the Homeland Security money that the state of Oregon is receiving. How does that fit into this budget, particularly the bioterrorism part?
Chair Wenders, Senator Morissette, it is very much tangential. The money that we get for public health preparedness and bioterrorism is specifically earmarked to certain functions and primarily around the biological issues around terrorism, and we really are not supposed to be dealing much at all with chemical issues. We really are stretching the grant application that we have and providing some funding to both the Department of Environmental Quality and to our chemical environmental toxicology section to do some planning and some assistance, but we really don't have the money to support these efforts, even though they're critical efforts around homeland security.
Would you, for me, when you give us more specifics, particularly the impacts on the lead and the methamphetamine labs, what that means as far as training to the counties or others in...
We will do so, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, to continue on, the LFO adjustments are ones that I've already discussed. Number one would be to eliminate the 25 positions for the bioterrorism grant. They were the positions that were already included in the 0305 budget.
So is that a duplication?
Correct. I'm just taking those positions out.
I just wanted to... for the record, to understand that it is a duplication and that's the reason they're being removed.
Correct.
Meaning that we will have positions.
Right.
The positions are already in the budget and they were put in through the reshoot again, so I'm backing them back out. Number two is the policy package 165 is where we eliminate the expenditure limitation for the vital record fees and nine positions in that. And then they can come back through DAS and request that again.
Okay.
Number three is to decrease policy packages 166, and that's where we're going to modify it with the withdrawal of the food and service component of House Bill 3156 and the change in the House Bill 2255 with the DAS 2 amendment.
And policy package 167?
And policy package 167, that's the foreign physician visa waiver, the Conrad 20, House Bill 2151. There's a change to increase the limitation for that with the change in the number of applicants.
And I believe we passed that on the Senate floor today.
Thank you very much.
I know I knew that Representative Bates would like that, but it did go across the floor.
Thank you very much.
With only a couple of objections.
I'd like to hear who those objections were later. Thank you very much.
Okay. You know, we always get some naysayers.
And Madam Chair, did you want to vote on this now? Or?
On the policy packages, yes. And I was waiting on Senator Carter to make it back, but maybe Representative Smith or Representative Bates will give me the vote. And remember, if this is the same process that we use for the other budgets and the reshoot that we're talking about, the preliminary work session, and this is not the final budget, just so that we all know. Okay. Representative Bates moved that we accept the policy option packages as presented by legislative fiscal and the recommended reshoot. Are there any objections?
Madam Chair,
yes.
I will provide a courtesy vote. And just want to express again concern about the federal grants that have already been declined, whatever that number is, and then concerned that we not jeopardize future public grants, federal grants in the area of public health. We need to do everything we can to maximize delivery of services for Oregonians. And so I'm hoping that our co-chairs are listening and hear this concern and act accordingly.
I believe that Senator Carter is probably there now. If there's an, if there are no, and your courtesy vote is recognized, if there's no objections. Now you have the next item is.
It would be the performance measures, which are also attached to the same packet with the memo.
Have we had Oh, this was a part of the package yesterday as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, members of the committee, you'll get that each time, and then we will show in which performance measures apply to which program.
Would you also, the same request is that make certain that based on any reshoot changes or any budgetary changes that the performance measures are updated?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, these were the most up-to-date as of, I believe it was 2 weeks ago.
Well, I think this committee wants to make certain that they are the most current, and if you will do that, I think that we can go ahead and pass out with that provision.
Madam Chair?
Representative Smith?
I move that the committee accepts the performance measures as submitted by LFO.
Representative Smith, moves that we accept the performance measures as presented by LFO and with the assurance that these are the most current and updated ones based on all transactions that have taken place. Are there any objections? Representative Smith.
Just a quick observation. If you look at some of these performance measures, I don't know how we expect them to even attempt to meet their 2005 target as we're taking away.
That is the reason for the request that they look at the actions that have been taken and to make certain that the performance measures reflect the realities.
Just a quick follow-up. I would hope that you look very closely at the number of cigarette packs sold per capita, because I don't know how we anticipate there's only going to be a 7% reduction when we've gutted our funding.
No.
Madam Chair, may I make an observation?
Can I finish? Yes, you can make your observation so I can go ahead and get my vote.
Well, I guess I just want to use the example of under people are healthy, percentages of uninsured Oregonians served by safety net clinics, and they're going to increase from 24 in the year 2000 to 36.5%. And again, I'm wondering if that reflects the budget that we're.
When that agency comes before us, we will ask the same of them that we're doing for public health in OMAP comes for us.
Okay, so we're just dealing with the.
We're just dealing now with public health. Okay. What do we have next?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, on the last page we have a staff measure summary which summarizes the fee increases from House Bill 5061. They're the fee increases that we spoke about in Policy Package 165.
So we are opening public hearing and work session on House Bill 5061 and that fee bill, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And you have walked us through those packages.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
And Senator Carter.
I move House Bill 5061 to the full committee of defense.
Senator Carter moves House Bill 5061 to the full committee with the DuPass recommendation. Are there any objections?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, one last thing, and this is an informational piece, in that the public lab had spoke about needing a new lab during the public hearings. It was in pretty bad shape. Just wanted to inform you that House Bill 5004, with capital construction bill, did give limitation of $6 million for the DEQ health lab to find suitable property, and that has been a suitable site. And if they do get a building, then the money is to go to making the building more usable for that lab.
And Senator Carter and Senator Gordley, in the passage of this, I also put on the record your concerns of making certain that any properties that they found meet the objectives of making sure that they're looking at depressed areas that where employment can be accessible, and particularly when we look at, and I know that Representative Smith had the same concern that when we're putting buildings in cities, that we keep that in mind as a economic driver for communities.
Madam Chair, they will return to the board if limitations necessary to complete that project as well.
In your assignment that you gave me, I would like to ask the department whatever outstanding grants that you have not had, that I get an information piece just like the one we had on the others to give to co-chairs.
Okay. And Madam Chair, if I could inquire, the obesity grant, what's the deadline on that one? Is that the grant that has the Monday deadline, or is it another one?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, the obesity grants, there's two of them. The one that's of primary concern is the physical activity and nutrition grant, or the PAN grant, the way we've been referring to it. That one, the application actually went in, and the funds have been awarded to us, but those we have not received permission yet to accept the funds.
How much is the award?
It's $450,000 a year for 5 years. And they're also, with that core funding in place, there's an option to apply for an additional $500,000 a year for pilot projects around the state.
I'm going to, we've had this conversation, and I'm going to implore you that when you write the request to this body, that you put it in language that this body can understand, so that the individuals who have the responsibility of saying yay and nay fully understand what it is that you're trying to accomplish and why. You know, I know so often we get caught up in talking to ourselves, and we use language and verbiage that is within our own professions, and we don't really ask ourselves the question, is the person that I'm talking to, can they understand the message that I'm trying to convey? And I think that we'll have much more, it would be much more successful, you know, if the requests come in to talk about that. Example, I know, and some of us here know, because we've been involved in the issue of obesity and hypertension and diabetes and what those correlations are. If someone hasn't been involved in those discussions, they don't have a clue of what you're talking about and why. And so I just say to you that the more specific that you can be in making your request, I think the more successful you will be in getting a good positive response. And maybe don't talk as much to ourselves, but remember that your audience don't know anything. You know, the assumption is that you're actually training us as well.
But the money is going to go to another state if we don't accept.
Well, that's why I'm asking them to get on the job and get the information to us as quickly as possible. I would also ask you to go ahead and have a conversation with the feds on the lead issue, because sometimes, even though we haven't got it through, they may still have something sitting there. So if you will have some conversations with your federal counterpart, let them know where we are, and see then what we can do. While the good senator from Portland does her job, and she's very effective.
What's the second one?
Well, there's the...
He already received that one, but he had a second one. Obesity.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, there is a second obesity grant. That's the STEPS grant. That one is due any day now to be submitted. Staff have been working very hard, as have our community partners, of which there are counties.
Well, while we're at it, you know, there is one entity in this process that doesn't mind being obese, and that's Rosie. And we just heard you say STEP. So, I mean, you know, just step up.
And Senator Gordon gave it.
Madam Chair, I knew I would pay eventually. One hour later. That's always the way it is, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll let you finish your comment.
I just saw a staffer going above and beyond the call of duty. Katie doesn't have to make his donations.
Well, I just want you to know that little Rosette wouldn't be sitting there if it hadn't been Katie. So this staffer has really been going beyond the bounds of duty, making certain that her colleagues and individuals really cough up, because she thought that Rosie didn't have a wide enough slot to get those dollar bills through, so she donated little Rosette. That's where Rosette comes from. And she's also given me some other ammunition that I will use when we get further into closure, that she thought of methods that I could use to collect even more for the hungry citizens of our state. So we want to make certain we put them to good use. Now, with that, you can complete your comment on FIP.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, I have to confess I'm not exactly sure what the acronym stands for, so I guess that means I have to call it the unnameable grant or something for the rest of my remarks. But this particular grant is for $1.5 million a year, 75% of which has to go out to community-based organizations around the state. And there is also an option to apply for several million dollars of additional monies, or there's the expectation that that would be available in future years. This is an initiative that's coming straight from the White House. This is a presidential initiative to improve the health of U.S. citizens. It's got bipartisan support, and we've been working very hard to pull this application together, as have our partners, so we really would like to be able to go ahead with that.
So that you can have fresh fruit. Well, that's the fresh fruit, and honestly, the president eats fresh fruit. When I was back in February had lunch, the president was given fresh fruit. He and Condoleezza Rice, and they really do run and jog, and they had a nice decadent dessert for the rest of us. And so I turned to the president and I said, "You're eating fresh fruit while you're giving me this fat stuff." So he shared his fresh fruit with me, and so I'm eating fresh fruit too. Senator Moore.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe you referenced four counties that are working with you on this grant application. Which counties are those?
Those are Jackson County, Benton County, Deschutes, and Coos and Curry are going in together. So they're two counties, but they're counted as one for the purposes of this
grant. I thought
grant.
My county was one of those. Thank you.
You know, actually, this issue is a serious issue. You know, we've been talking about Rosie and Rosette, and if you look at the statistics and you look at what's occurring in America, we really do need to get serious about this particular health issue and the rise in obesity in this country and its effect on the health of individuals. You know, at the conference that we were in, when we talked about hypertension, for example, and our increase in diabetics, and there's just so many other health costs. I don't need to have to tell because he's working basis sitting up here, you know, nodding his head. And I think we take it for granted. We have not paid a lot of attention to that particular piece. We got busy and we looked at the cigarette, and we talked about how the cigarette has created enormous health problems. Well, this is another one that is creating enormous health problems. As we raffle with the Oregon Health Plan budget and we look at the cost increase on this side, I think we also have to be prudent as policymakers to see what we can do on the other end to start preventing some of these catastrophic health problems in our society. So I support your efforts in the path that you're going. Any additional comments today? Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Winters. I'm going to digress just a little bit back on that building because I'm feeling a little angry today. The reason I'm supporting the building is with the understanding that it is going into an economically distressed area. And I guess I have a long memory, and if I find out it goes into the suburbs of West Lynn or Beaverton, I'm going to be very, very disappointed. So I just want that on the record, that my expectation is it goes into a community that can use that type of building. I'm feeling on it.
That's okay. It's Thursday. Well, if there's no further business today.
Madam Chair, can I just clarify real quick what on a technical, mundane issue. But what I understand the subcommittee has taken action on today is the policy packages only. We have not done anything with the reshoot adjustments or any of the co-chair adjustments.
We did do the reshoot adjustments.
Okay, so reshoot is included in
that. They're included, and what we have been doing is that those are we have accepted all those preliminarily, recognizing that as we go through this budget process, there could be puts, you know, that is taking place, but in order so that we can begin getting the budget built, the total budget will then come back as one package. But just to know that this is preliminary and that there may be puts here.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. With that, we are adjourned. I want to thank you.